This is an interview with Jim Hull, February 20th, 2008. We're in the Studio X of WILL in Urbana, Illinois. My name is Nancy Rotzel, and the videographer is Henry Radcliffe. Okay, tell me where you were when World War II started. Pearl Harbor, how did you hear about it?
Well, I was in Galion, Ohio, and was very distracted. Couldn't believe that anybody had that much power and the guts to attack the United States. But they did, and of course that was the beginning of World War II.
How old were you?
I was 21.
And what were you doing?
I was working at an industrial plant, making dump bodies for, got galleon on them. You see them all over the world. And I did assembly line work, different things. And I was drafted. I didn't volunteer. And September 1942, I was inducted into the service at Cleveland, Ohio. They gave me a 2 weeks leave, and I went back to Galion to straighten up my affairs. Then I had to report back to Cleveland, and all the people that was inducted at that time in September returned, and they put us on a train, and we went to El Paso, Texas. At El Paso, Texas, where we got our basic training and our 25-mile hikes, and we became the Coast Guard artillery. After 2 weeks at Fort Bliss, Texas, I was made a PFC, Private First Class, and I trained a lot of men down there because they didn't know their left hand from their right hand. I had to put stones in their left hand and sticks or whatever I could find. And I did a lot of drilling, you know, left flank, right flank, rear march, and all those good commands. And we done a great job. And at 12 weeks, they made me a corporal. Well, by that time, we was ready to move from Fort Bliss, Texas to Fort Knox, Kentucky. And at Fort Knox, Kentucky, we became a 453rd Automatic Weapons Battalion. And there we accumulated our 2.5-ton trucks to pull 40-millimeter guns. And we accumulated, and I was in B Battery. The battalion was consisted of a headquarters, A, B, C, and D batteries. And I was in B Battery. We picked up a half track that had four 50 caliber machine guns on it, picked up our small rifles, carbines, small pistols, and one thing another. And I forget how long we were at Fort Knox. And then they moved us from there to Camp Stewart, Georgia. And we was in the swamps down there, and we slept in pup tents where the snakes like to crawl in under our bedrolls and stay with us at night. And the alligators and the wild hogs and all that good stuff down there. And we did, of course, more training. And then from there, we went on Tennessee maneuvers. Well, at that time, they made me acting sergeant over a gun crew, and that's 15 men. Oh, I forgot to say, in Fort Knox, Kentucky, we picked up electronic equipment to guide the gun with an 800-pound generator, and of course it had to generate the electricity from the director to the gun. And of course we trained with that all through Tennessee maneuvers. One of the little incidents that I remember in the Tennessee maneuvers was, you know, we had to dig a hole to set the 40-millimeter gun in. I had a little guy by the name of Larry Carman in Grand Pass, Oregon. He said, "I ain't digging a hole." Well, he and I had a little talk, and he dug a hole. And from there, they moved us to North Carolina, where we fired out over the Atlantic. And I, on my gun crew, I had taught the guys, you know, you got to lead your plane quite a bit, and the vertical had to be on line, of course. And one day we were fired down there, and the guy on the on the azimuth side of the director, he turned around to the lieutenant, and he says, "The next shot, I'll cut the cord on that target." And then the next shot cut that target off of that plane. So we, of course, got a great name from that episode. And when they moved us from there up to Fort Dix, New Jersey, to go to England, we pulled the gunnery on the ship. And I, being a artillery mechanic, I was allowed on deck on that ship. And I spent a lot of times out there on the deck. And at times I could see the rudders on the back end of the boat that it rocked up so high. So we got into a real bad storm, and the boat tipped way over. If it had tipped another 2 degrees, we would have sunk. But anyway, we arrived in Liverpool, England.
How long was that after you had been inducted?
That was February 1944. And we had, in England, they moved us down to a place that called Blackshamore. It was outfitted with quartz huts, you know, the round buildings. And we practiced some gunnery there, and the invasion was June the 6th, and they had moved us from there down to Yeovil near Southampton in England, where we had to waterproof our guns and everything, get ready for D-Day. And we didn't go in on D-Day because we were artillery. The infantry had to go in ahead of us and get some land so we could move in there. And just before we left England, I have a letter here from President Eisenhower, and it is to the soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force. "You are about to embark upon the greatest crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of the Nazi tyranny over the oppressed people of the Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well trained, well equipped, and battle hardened. He will fight savagely. This is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumph of 40-41. United Nations have inflicted upon the Germans great defeats in open battle, man to man. Our air offensive has seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking, President Dwight D. Eisenhower. And now, when I read this, I about cry.
Did every man receive that?
At that time, I didn't think, you know, we were just gung-ho to go get Hitler. But now when I read that, it means a lot.
I understand that. Did every man receive a copy of that letter?
Every man got a copy of that.
What was the reaction?
What?
What was the reaction?
Well,
among the
we
men?
Didn't think anything about it, or I didn't at the time, you know. I was just so built up with all the training I had been through. And I had one goal, and that was to get Hitler. But now it means something.
When you went in, you said the infantry went in ahead of you.
Yeah, the infantry went in ahead of us.
So you knew what had happened to the infantry when they hit the beaches.
Yeah, we lost 6,000 men there. Now those boats in the English, or in that English Channel there, they had balloons like a football that were up above the ships, all 300 or 400 feet, to keep the German planes from getting right down on us to strafe us. So, you know, we got strafed and shelled there because they was way up on a mountain and they were in concrete bunkers. And they had dropped a lot of bombs on them, but of course they were still able to shoot at us down there on the ships. And I was fortunate enough to get off of the ship and get into a boat, and they took me to shore. And I went in at Omaha Beach. There was two beaches for the United States. One of them was Omaha, and the other Idaho or Utah. Anyway, it was two beaches. I went at Utah.
Omaha.
And you heard about the hedgerows. The hedgerows was a lot of deep-rooted trees and concrete bunkers built in them. And one day they took our 40-millimeter guns up there, and we shot direct fire on them. Our gun carried a missile, was about 17 inches long with a 3/4-pound shell in the end of it, would take down a plane easily. But we fired direct fire into those bunkers. And after we captured some of them Germans, they wanted to know what kind of a gun we had. And after the breakthrough there at St. Lo, we were attached to the 83rd Infantry Division, and we guarded a 105 howitzer outfit. We went out and liberated a big seaport at the end of the Normandy Peninsula named Cherbourg. And oh my, the men and equipment that poured through that seaport, we had men and guns, everything all around us. It was a tremendous group. And we were in the 1st Army, the 3rd Army, the 9th Army, the 15th Army. We went where all the battles were. And we was in the 1st Army there. And of course, everybody's heard about Patton, Blood and Guts. And we were attached to him. And Loire River, which is about the middle of France, Germans had been driven out of Africa back through Italy and southern France. Well, a bunch of them Germans came up there on the Loire River, and 20,000 of them surrendered there. And from there, we went with Pat to the Rhine River, and he wanted to keep on going, but they wouldn't let him. So I don't know what was on the other side. Anyway, we left them and we went north, and our next battle was the Argonne Force. It's also known as the Hertford Force. And the mud was knee-deep. We had to cut down pine trees to make us a road to run those 2.5-ton trucks over to pull our equipment. After that, they pulled us on north, and we had a rest period in there. And it wasn't long till they moved us on north again. And where we had been, they moved a green unit in there. Well, the Germans had somehow built up a real tremendous force back of us, or east of us. And when the Battle of Bulge started, they run right over that green unit and was headed for the English Channel. Well, they took us, the 83rd Infantry Division, around, and we hit them in the nose and stopped them. And then in the Battle of the Bulge, it was 7 above 0. Man, it was cold. And one day, I had fixed my bayonet. I saw a German sitting behind a tree with his rifle, just squatted down and ready to shoot. And I walked around the tree. He wasn't moving. He was froze stiff, and I just kicked him over. It was cold. Another thing that happened there was one of the buddies got killed, and I was cold, and I took his blanket that carried with me. Well, from there, we went on east, driving the Germans clear back into Germany. And at the Elbe River, the 83rd Division was the only division that held a bridge over the Elbe River. And we named it Truman Bridge. And it got a picture of it here, the sign that he put on it. Well, after that, we went into the Army of Occupation, where we just went into the German houses and tried to confiscate their guns and equipment. And some of them didn't understand. They wanted us to open the doors. And I kicked in a lot of beautiful doors to get their equipment. And in one of them, I picked up a swastika flag that I have with me. And it's pretty unique because I took that flag and sent it to my mother and dad who lived in California. And Mom washed it and put it out on the line. And she had more airplanes diving at it, that she knew what to do with it. So she wasn't long getting the flag down. after the occupation, they took us down into southern France, and they had these great big tents where they was consolidating all of us. You had to have so many units to go back to the United States. And I found out that I was down the line a little ways. And I asked him if I could go back to the area in England, Handley, where we were at, Blackshamore. And one night I was in line to get some fish and chips, and there was two girls ahead of me. And one ahead of the girl in front of me turned around and looked at me, and she looked, I looked at her, and we went, got her fish and chips, and disappeared. So I went to a pub, and she got with her girlfriend, and they looked me up. And we started going together. going to theaters and started corresponding. And her name was Doris Bladen. And she tried to get me to go to England. And I said, no, you want to come to the United States, I'll marry you. And she came to the United States. And then we had, that was January the 1st, 1947. And my brother took me to New York to meet her. She came over on the Queen Elizabeth. And we was married January the 11th in Mansfield, Ohio, by the minister by the name of Dr. Sheriff. And then we had four children, Julie and Glenda, Brian and Danny. And now I've got 9 grandkids, 17 great-grandkids, and 2 great-great-grandkids. So that's about, I went back to England, France, where I was shipped home. And I was discharged at Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania, December the 15th, 1945.
I know you brought something along to show you how, to show people how different the food was that you had when you were in the service as compared to what your wife was willing to cook when you got home. Do you want to show?
I've got some K ration here. This was our evening meal. It was chopped pork and eggs. At times when you didn't have anything to eat, these come in pretty handy.
How many of those could you carry at a time? How many days worth?
Well, they usually keep these at the headquarters, and then they take them out to you when the time came to feed you. This was our breakfast, for our breakfast food. You put water with it. That was for lunch, and that was for supper. And we had paper. You know what that was for? And we had coffee. And above what else? A package of cigarettes. You know, it's been so long since I had them out here that they're stuck fast in there, but
that's all right.
They're in there.
That's all right.
So,
so when you were at the Battle of the Bulge, you were carrying a gun in addition to your serving the big guns.
And carrying
packages of food.
Yeah.
Have you talked to your grandkids about all your experience?
No. No, this will be news for them.
When you came back, did you talk about it?
No.
Why was that?
I don't know. I just never did.
Well, we're grateful you're talking about it now.
Yeah. Yeah, now after the war was over, we received a letter from President Harry Truman, and I'll read it here. To you who answered the call of your country and served in its armed forces to bring about the total defeat of the enemy, I extend the heartfelt thanks of a grateful nation. As one of the nation's finest, you undertook the most severe task one can be called upon to perform, because you demonstrated the fortitude, resourcefulness, and calm judgment necessary to carry out that task. We now look to you for leadership and example in further Exalting Our Country in Peace, President Harry Truman.
Looking back on it, what do you remember most?
Well, I think the most thing was being shot at and strafed. I was in the middle of France one day, and somebody was shooting at me, and I could feel the air off of the bullet and hear it would go by my left ear. And, of course, being strafed and shelled, I'm very, very fortunate to be here.
I know there were a lot of men that were lost who you probably miss. When you came back, I know you did something for the soldiers in Illinois, the recognition.
Yeah, took me 6 years to get the Purple Heart Memorial Highway on Route 72 from Champaign to Quincy, Illinois. I started out with Representative Tim Johnson and Rick Winkle and Tom Burns and Neilma Jacobson, several of the representatives in that 6 years. And I finally succeeded in getting a Purple Heart Memorial Highway for all the men to have Purple Hearts in the state of Illinois.
How many medals did you win?
I have 7 medals. I have one for Normandy, Brittany, the Ardennes Force, the Battle of the Bulge, and Northern Germany, where we went back to push the Germans back into Germany and the occupation. And I have another one from the people of Normandy for the guys that liberated Normandy. And I have another one that I was awarded a certificate of merit for outstanding performance of taking care of all the guns and equipment, keeping it up in working order, and every time I would have a gun that might need repair, the captain said, "There's my driver, there's my Jeep, and here's the map." So I was very fortunate enough. Now, if you got off of the road to get to your ordnance, you would get shot. And I tried to pick out a lot of landmarks when I went by. So when I come back, I knew I was on the right road. And I was very fortunate. Got to the ordnance, got back with all the equipment.
Did you celebrate when the war was declared that it was over?
Oh, I might have done a few jumps. And yeah, was pretty happy.
How'd your family feel when you got home?
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
Did you call them to tell them you were coming?
Yeah, we wrote letters back and forth. My mom wrote me all the time.
No phone calls?
No.
Do you feel satisfied at the end of it?
Oh, yes, very much so. Yeah, it was a great accomplishment.
Is there anything you'd like to say to people who are seeing this about your experience?
Well, I think I'm very grateful to WILL for having me in for the interview and telling people of my experience. And I understand it's for educational purposes too, that maybe a lot of people can relate to what I went through.
Thank you.